This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome into the Tuesday edition of the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. As you heard the radio voice, it's Pepe and friends. My friends are on the Progressive guest line tonight. I'll tell you about them shortly. My friend's also running Rock and Roll Control in Houston, John Belmer. What's going on, buddy? Everything okay in H-Town?
Yeah, everything's great down here. It's very, very hot, but other than that, everything's pretty good, especially when the Astros are on a roll the way they are.
It's always hot at this time of the year down there, isn't it?
Yeah, but it feels different. Like, I got in my car. I think it's been 3 days in a row. I'd said 104, 105. It's just bad.
So people fired up about the Astros. Obviously, I know people are fired up about the build-up for the and the rebuild, I should say, for the Houston Rockets. But what's going on with the Texans? Are people fired up for this season, or is it just kind of a wait-and-see, dude?
No, it's still wait-and-see. I think people, they're moving in the right direction, but they're still too far away to be excited about it.
You're kind of
in an abyss.
A lot of pieces to figure out there. But
yes.
Again, it was 4th of July weekend. Hope everyone had a great 4th of July. I did here in Canton, Massachusetts, 20 minutes south of Boston. Had a little party on the 3rd, and it kind of moved into the 4th. And then the 4th was just a very quiet, quiet day. Just kind of relaxed. Cooked a little bit on the grill. But the 3rd, man, it was off the hook. Fun times at the Pepe compound. And fired up to do some more sports talk tonight, back in the saddle. Tonight we have a great show lined up for you. Speaking of 4th of July, by the way, I know everybody loves the guy, but Joey Chestnut, man, he is fun. He is a fun dude to watch. 15 straight years winning the Mustard Belt champion, the champion of the Mustard Belt. 63 hot dogs. Now, if you had the over 64.5, you got to be pissed. Because he had that protester that jumped in. And the dude's on one leg, by the way, on crutches. A protester jumps in. He chokes him out. Middle of eating a hot dog. Probably could have got another dog and a half. And would have went over the 64.5. But there are some books out there that gave a refund. I think FanDuel gave a refund. Speaking of gambling, Dan Lifshatz from 98.5 will join us. Julian Edlow will join us. Rick Horro, Bobby Kravitzky, Kent Thompson. Coming up next, we'll talk some football. I'm fired up for football. From the New England Football Journal, John Lyons is next. Keep it right here. It's the Diehards.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Before we get to the Progressive guest line, I want to tell you about my friends at Willie's Super Brew. Willie's Super Brew is a hard seltzer blended with real fruit. It's gluten-free, low in carbs and calories. It is brewed with thousands of pounds of real fruits and spices, meaning it is bursting with real flavor. It's about drinking real, a drink made from real ingredients by real people with real impact, all started by a goat farmer named Willie, a surfer named Nico on a Cape Cod beach, and the rest is history. Check them out at superbrew.com. That's superbrew.com or at Drink Super Brew. Let's kick it off on the Progressive Insurance guest line tonight. Progressive, bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. From the New England Football Journal, he's a host of the Diehards, friend of the show, Mr. John Lyons. John, what's going on, man? Did you have a good 4th?
I did, Pep. How about yourself?
I had a great 3rd, and the 4th was just very relaxing. So the 3rd was my 4th, if that makes any sense.
No, it does, especially with the 4th on a Monday, that kind of long weekend type deal. I hear you for sure.
Did you light any fireworks off, and do you have all 10 fingers left?
So I did not light any fireworks off, and thankfully all my fingers and toes are intact.
Good, buddy. Good, buddy. Hey, man, I know you're busy. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. I'm curious, before we get to the NFL stuff and the stuff on the field, stuff off the field, and a big story that broke yesterday, Boston University reported that the late, great Denver Broncos NFL receiver Demaryius Thomas suffered from CTE. I know you're a college football coach at Bridgewater State College here in Massachusetts, Division III. But how much do you talk to your college players about safety, not leading with their heads, and how much has it changed from a coaching standpoint when you have all this other stuff that we didn't have, say, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something that's really a priority across football today from the youth level all the way up to the professional level, because even kids that play youth football now are taught to tackle differently than they were maybe 15 or 20 years ago. It's something that myself and my own coaching, I stress a lot. I mean, safety really comes first because we don't want to see guys get hurt, not only for their own lives, but also just for us as a team. We don't want to see that. And there's ways to play football and to play it physically and to be safe. Now, the NFL, I know, is a little bit of a different animal because they play 17 games. They only have one bye week, which I do think is a bad thing, by the way. And they're so fast and so strong that you're going to probably never eliminate cases of CTE and violence from NFL football. But I do think it's come a long way in the past 15 years or so with new rule changes, better equipment, and just more awareness about safer ways to just play the game. And I think it has come a long way, but I think if we're being honest, it's probably never something that's going to be totally eliminated.
You know, John, it's funny because I played 1,000 years ago. And, you know, late 80s in high school and early 90s, and I played defense. I was, you know, at cornerback and safety. But we were always taught, you know, you tackle with your head up to the ball side, and you put your arms on a wrap. And everyone today complains about all the arm tackling. But the reality is you're not teaching the player that way anymore. You're not teaching them to get their head in there. And it's just different football. So you can't fault these guys that are trying to arm tackle because, you know what? You got to keep your head away from things nowadays. It's just very challenging.
It is, but like I said before, I think you can find a balance between being as safe as possible but still being physical, still being tough, and still being able to take guys down when you're on defense. So it's one of those things that, you know, I think as the years go by, we're going to get closer and closer to that best balance possible, and I think we're getting there, but I just think it's still a little bit of a work in progress.
Hey, man, I know you're a football guy. Another somber story. Hank Goldberg died Monday on his 82nd birthday, believe it or not. He was one of the first handicapping personalities. I know there's a million of them out there today. But a sad day for ESPN and the sports world. Again, this was a guy that we grew up with watching football, and it was Hank Goldberg. He's on the TV. Like, I know that larger-than-life figure. A sad day for football.
Yeah, definitely. And whenever you see an icon like that, I think back to a few months back when John Clayton passed away as well. You know, when you see guys like that on TV, they're guys that many, you know, millions of fans grew up with and enjoyed watching. But also, you know, guys like that do a great job of taking a game that maybe some people casually watch and explaining the nuances of it. Very easy to digest. John Clayton was very good at that as well, where he could take something complex from football, explain it to a casual viewer in a way that was entertaining, easy to digest, but also the viewer would learn something. So definitely a big loss for the sports world and for the broadcasting and football world as well with the passing of Hank Goldberg.
Hanging out on the Progressive Insurance guest line from the New England Football Journal, host of the Diehards, dear friend of the show, John Lyons. Again, Progressive Insurance makes bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. Hey, man, I was away for a few days doing this radio show, but I'm curious. I know Deshaun Watson had the whole, you know, hearings and all that stuff, and it's kind of a wait-and-see game. What do you think is going to happen now? All the rumors are he's going to probably get a year suspension. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I look it to be a year to 2 years suspension.
Oh, you think it's two? Okay.
I think the NFL is going to go for two initially, and then there's going to be appeals and back and forth, and I think we're going to end up with one, maybe a little bit over one. You know, maybe they'll make it around 20 games, so
all
of this season and then the first three games of next year, something like that, because really this is a situation where he may try to argue that he sat out last year, so he's already had quote-unquote time served, but the NFL is going to say, well, no, we didn't have the hearing till now, and we want 2 years from now. I think it's going to end up being a year, which still would be 2 years from the last time he played, which would be one of, if not the longest, absences from NFL football due to misconduct in league history. You go back to Michael Vick and his prison time. I think that he was out 3 or 4 years before he came back. So it's really, they're in pretty unprecedented territory overall. It's pretty rare territory, but I think it ends up being a year. and maybe a touch more, but I don't think any more than a year and a half or so.
Hey, man, on the ticker today, it was about Baker Mayfield, and, you know, he said he's not playing for the Browns, and he asked for a trade in March. I don't know why this is ticker material. Everyone knew this. It's kind of common sense. But if you're Carolina, the Carolina Panthers, do you want Baker Mayfield? What are the pros and cons for getting this dude?
Yeah, well, look, I think if you're a team that doesn't have an answer, a quarterback, you definitely go for Baker Mayfield. Like, the Carolina Panthers, to me, they don't have a clear answer, a quarterback. So if I'm them, I go for it. The Seattle Seahawks, they don't really have a clear answer, a quarterback. If I'm them, you know, I go for it because Baker Mayfield is a good player. He's had some health issues, and he's had some maturity issues. Now, if he's past those maturity issues and he can stay healthy, then he's going to be a good player. The problem is he just, we haven't seen him get past those yet. But if you're a team, especially like Seattle or Carolina, maybe rebuilding, you can take a chance because if he doesn't work out, you can draft the next guy next year or the year after that. And if he does work out, he's still in his prime and he could be a great quarterback for years to come. So if I was Baker Mayfield, I'd tell the Browns to pound sand and I would try to go to either Carolina or Seattle if they could make that work.
The Four Letter Network had a story today that I saw. It's probably been out for a few days about the most underrated players on each team. And they picked all 32 teams, the most underrated player on the team. And one that stood out for me was Tua for Miami. Is he really underrated? I mean, he was a high draft pick. A lot of expectations coming out. And obviously he had the injuries and whatnot. But is he really underrated?
I think maybe a little bit because some of the criticism for him is really, really harsh. And look, I don't think he's the answer in Miami either, but I also don't think he's an awful player. And I think that there's a narrative out there that he is a terrible player. I mean, he's a below average to average player. So I think in that sense, he's maybe underrated. Honestly, though, on the Miami Dolphins, I look at Xavien Howard because he's one of the best corners in the NFL, and I don't hear enough people talk about him. So, in a way, I think he's underrated just in that he doesn't get the press that he deserves. But from the Tua perspective, I can understand it just because I think some of the narratives around him are just too harsh, and therefore that makes him underrated.
And, John, in our backyard here in New England, they had Kendrick Bourne as the most underrated player for the New England Patriots, had 74 targets last season. You agree with that?
I do, and he had 800 yards receiving. He made some really big plays. He had, I think it was, like a 42 or 44-yard catch and run against the Titans for a touchdown, which was one of the Patriots' most explosive plays of the entire season. And this is a guy, too, that, you know, he turns 27 in about a month from now. I think early August he turns 27. So he's still right in the middle of his prime. He's really explosive. He averaged almost 15 yards per catch last season. So he can do a lot of different things, too. He can run with the ball in his hand. He can go deep. He can run short routes. So to me, when I'm looking at the Patriots, I agree. I think he's their most underrated player, and I'm actually expecting a really big year from him in 2022.
And, again, we are the diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network based out of Houston, and it seems like the cute, trendy pick is Davis Mills, the QB. Everyone's saying he's underrated, he's this, he's that. He was the guy on that list as well. I mean, to me, it seems like everybody loves this guy, and the guy has all the skill in the world. Is he really underrated?
You know, for a guy who, by the way, was Nick Caserio's first draft pick in Houston because they didn't have a pick till the third round when he was taken, I think he played really well last year. I mean, he was a guy that he was kind of, you know, they took a flyer on him at that point. They still didn't really know what was going to happen with Deshaun Watson, if he was going to come back, or maybe they were going to trade him and get some sort of NFL-ready quarterback in return. And he played 2,600 yards last year, 66% completion percentage, 16 touchdowns. I mean, the numbers are solid, but just overall, on a bad team, you know, he played, I thought, all right. And for a developmental rookie-type guy, he wasn't Mac Jones, and he wasn't Trevor Lawrence, and he wasn't one of those guys, but he looked like a legitimate NFL QB for long stretches of last year. So if I'm Houston, I ride it out with him this year. I see how he does, and they might have found, you know, in the third round, their answer for the future there.
John Lyons, final question. Kenny Pickett, Pittsburgh Steelers all in on the replacement for Ben Roethlisberger, but they do have Mitch Trubisky. If you are like Tomlin, if you're that organization, you want Kenny Pickett to get in there right away, or are you going to, like, ride Mitch Trubisky until he's ready?
I would rather Kenny Pickett get in there right away because
I
just do not trust Mitchell Trubisky.
Me too.
I mean, I haven't seen him play well anywhere he's gone. And so, look, if all of a sudden he's a different guy after being in Buffalo and being behind Josh Allen and coached by Brian Daboll, and he's suddenly good, fine. But really, I'd have to believe that. You know, I'd have to see that to believe it, because I'd much rather Kenny Pickett let the rookie grow. And by the way, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they are not going to make the playoffs, in my opinion, but they are not a terrible situation for a rookie quarterback to go into. They have a really good head coach. They have the defensive player of the year. Deontay Johnson had the most targets in the NFL during the second half of the season last year. He's a very good player. They have good pieces on offense. So if I'm, you know, Kenny Pickett, that's not a bad situation to come into. And the Steelers, I want to ride it with him so that way, maybe next year when they've fully rebuilt and they're really ready to contend, it won't be his first year starting either. So I'm much higher on Pickett than I am Mitch Trubisky.
Hey, John Lyons, keep up the good work with the New England Football Journal and keep up the good work here with the Die Hard Sports Map Radio Network. You're in tomorrow. I just want to let you know, and you're with Mason Souza. I want to let you guys know that the fridge is stocked with Viva Seltzers, Tequila Seltzers, and Willie Super Brew. So you guys help yourself, obviously, after the show tomorrow night, okay?
Oh, I can't wait, and I also cannot wait to be at Food Truck Festivals of America on Saturday.
All right, pal. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time. We'll be listening tomorrow night. There he is, John Lyons of New England Football Journal of the Diehards. Take a timeout. When we return, the sports professor, sports business consultant guru, Mr. Rick Horro, hops on the Progressive guest line next. You are listening to the Diehards. It is the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're back with the Diehards. The Diehards. Time now to go to the phones to visit with the sports professor himself, Rick Horro.
He sounds like a smart man.
Oh, he's a brilliant man because he joins the Diehards. I mean, is there anything else to be said? Mr. Rick Horro, how are you, buddy? Did you have a good fourth?
I'm doing a great fourth and heading out to Glasgow and Dublin and St. Andrews tomorrow. So it's even going to be a better sixth than a good fourth.
Do you have a lot of flyer miles? Because it seems like all you do is travel.
Yeah, but you know what? You got to go to events, and if events aren't in the same town, then you're going to go to them. You know, I chose to be in Brookline because it's a cool event.
Yep.
I did not do Wimbledon this year, although I could have left my dog a day early and, you know, gone to the quarterfinals and changed planes and gotten to Scotland. But my rescue dog has PTSD, and leaving him out in the fireworks would have been
fair
ungodly,
enough.
Man. So,
hey,
right?
Man, have you ever traveled to Coney Island for the hot dog eating contest?
No, but I've interviewed Joey Chestnut, and I've interviewed him as a celebrity and as an icon. And he likes the idea of being an icon because he likes the perennial desire to find sponsors. You know, Nathan's gives him a deal. Don't disclose it. He doesn't disclose it. But there are a lot of others. You know, ESPN, pretty significant time on the 4th. We're all bored. We're waiting for fireworks. Yeah. And we want to see if a guy with a sprained ACL or whatever his ligament damage has can take a protester, put him in a headlock, and still eat 63 hot dogs.
63, yes.
That is crazy. Stout.
It's unbelievable, and yeah. I watch this every year, and we did an event here in Boston for years called the Hot Dog Safari. Just had an event here, Hot Dog Safari Food Truck and Craft Beer Festival, with my company, Food Truck Festival America. And, you know, hot dogs are near and dear to my heart. I love them so much. And we've had some of these guys at our festivals back in the day, and we had Crazy Legs Conti and some of these guys. But watching Joey Chestnut, what he does, is truly amazing. To eat 63 hot dogs, I think his record is 75 or something stupid. But on one leg yesterday, Rick, chokes a protester out, continues to eat his hot dog. Now, the over-under, by the way, was 64.5. Some, I think FanDuel gave everybody their money back because they felt the protester got in his way of getting that over. It's just remarkable what he does. And I'm curious, Rick, ratings-wise, does this do well in the ratings? Because it's during the day. I have to believe most people are out at the beach. I DVR just wherever I'm at. I want to make sure I don't miss it. I hear about it, but I DVR because I need to watch it. But do people watch this thing live?
Yeah, well, so Wimbledon's over.
Yep.
Then they segue right to it. What the hell else are you going to watch before the fireworks, right? So as far as I'm concerned, this may not be the right answer, but when you look at consistent athletes who have dominated their sport, who's better? Who's more
Nobody.
Consistent?
Nobody.
Right.
Hey, exactly. Stupid question. Does DV, I ask a lot of those, I know. Does DVR count in ratings when you DVR something? Does it know that you DVR it and know that you watch it and you get part of that ratings group?
No, that's one of the final things that needs to be done. You know,
gotcha.
NBC pioneered the total audience delivery ad, and they're taking, you know, churches, bars, everything else, devices, Peacock, tablets.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to do the DVR stuff, too. I do think that as streaming becomes the norm, you can also, you know, DVR and stream. So I think we're going to figure out technically how to count all the eyeballs. You know, when you look at the eyeballs, advertisers ought to not guess. They ought to know exactly who's watching and why.
Hey, Mr. Sports Professor Rick Horro from HorroSports.com. Wimbledon, you mentioned earlier. How were the ratings and what were the crowds like?
Not great early, but they caught up. I think it was probably one of those things where, you know, coming back out last year, limited crowds, year before, no tournament. And so when you think about it, that was one of the first events that used the COVID insurance cancellation to pick up some money. Not that Wimbledon needs it, but it took a little while to get there. And if they were behind the eight ball with any dollars, they made it up, because Sunday was a real Sunday as opposed to one to make up because of rain out matches. Now with the roof, you don't need that. And they made the brilliant decision to do that middle Sunday, not give a rest to anybody, but instead of having all 16 round of 16s on Monday, you mix them up, 8 Sunday, 8 Monday. It was brilliant yesterday, brilliant the day before, and brilliant today.
Hey, lots of NBA movement, a lot of excitement for basketball fans, trade rumors still out there. When an all-star player and a stud player gets traded to those other teams, is it safe to say that the jersey sales skyrocket with that new team?
Short term. Now, Kevin Durant, who has made his stated goal to play for every one of the 30 teams in the NBA before he retires. Well, that's not true, but it's pretty damn close, right? So, you know, will we see KD Nets jersey? Yeah, we will. There'll be collector's items because he didn't play enough. And I think the rumor, too, is that we're going to take Ronaldo's bitching because he doesn't want to play for a relegated soccer team. And we'll trade him straight up for KD. What do you think?
Why not? Let's do it. Hey, man, sports gambling app industry, excited for the growth of female users. I was reading one of your stories. I'm curious, there's a lot of female handicappers out there today. Does this translate to this situation where there's a lot of female handicappers, and that means there's a lot of female gamblers out there? Is there any translation, correlation there?
I'm not sure the handicappers make the gamblers. I just think that it's an industry where we have a lot of females that are interested in the industry. We have 4.5 million females now that are gambling. The men still drive the deal, but there are a lot more women entering the gambling sportsbook world than men. And so it's a good thing. There are some people that are saying that number is made up because these are ghost bets that the husbands or the boyfriends want. I don't think that's true. I think it's a stat that it stands on its own.
Hey, man, final minute here. Gambling, speaking of, Kansas is a go. They got the approval. North Carolina lost by a single vote. They've got to be pissed. And what's the latest on Massachusetts? Are we getting gambling for the football season, damn it?
Well, right now it doesn't look great for the football season. But you never know because, look, everybody wants to spend the money. They just haven't pulled the trigger. And if I'm Massachusetts and I see Maine, for God's sakes, and New Hampshire and Connecticut and New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania, and not Massachusetts, what's wrong with your state? What's wrong with your state?
I don't get it. Hey, man, by the way, you're flying to Scotland. How long is that flight?
It's about 5 hours.
Oh, that's it? Okay.
Maybe 7. You know, if you drink enough, the difference between 5 and 7 is negligible.
So do you sneak your own nips on the plane, or you just fork over the money?
Well, it depends on what section you're sitting in. How's that?
Hey, Rick, good stuff as always. You're the best, pal. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, man, bye.
There he is, the great sports professor himself. Rick Horro on the Progressive Guest Line. Another timeout. When we return, the NBA is freaking crazy. Good friend of the show, Bobby Kravitsky, is next with the Diehards. Keep it right here.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Friends are on the Progressive guest line. That is on hold right now because I want to tell you about my friends at Viva Tequila Seltzer. Viva Seltzer, made with real tequila, makes for a light and refreshing taste to enjoy your post-game celebrations with zero sugar, a 4.5% ABV, and only 88 calories. An ice cold Viva serves as an open invitation to turn a good time into a great time. Hello. Viva's premium tequila seltzers come in huckleberry, grapefruit, elderberry, and watermelon. They're all fantastic. Huckleberry is my favorite and can be found today at your local retailer or favorite watering hole. For more information, check them out at VivaTequilaSeltzer.com. That's VivaTequilaSeltzer.com, or follow them on Instagram at Viva Seltzer. Live long, live well, and live it up with Viva Tequila Seltzer. Let's go back to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, what do your home and auto have in common? They're yours, and Progressive protects them both. Bundle today at Progressive.com. Covers the NBA, covers the Boston Celtics at SI Now, Basketball Insiders, and, of course, he's the diehard, Bobby Krivitsky. Bobby, did you have a good fourth, buddy?
Oh, Pep, I had a great fourth. Nice holiday weekend. Chance to see some friends, spend some time on the water, play a little golf. What about you? What did you do for the fourth?
I ate a lot of hot dogs, man. That's just what I do. But it's
That's
like
why
any,
they call you the sausage king.
It's like any other day, you know what I mean? I eat hot dogs all the time, so pretty much same old me. By the way, Joey Chestnut, 63 hot dogs. How many do you think you could crush in 10 minutes?
You know, I was wondering about the other day, even just for 5 minutes, what I could put down.
Yeah.
I think that my heart is bigger than what my production would ultimately be. So what I'm going to tell you is the over-under should be set at 5.5, but I would probably take the under.
All right. See, I honestly think in 10 minutes, hot dogs and rolls, I could probably do 7, maybe 8, and then get sick. I don't know how he does it. I really don't.
Are you dunking in the water?
No, that's gross. That's disgusting.
I think you have to for this type of a thing, though. When there's a clock and you're trying to put down as many as possible, I've never done it. It probably is disgusting, but I think you need the water.
I think we should do one on the show, but I think insurance purposes, we wouldn't be allowed to. I think that'd be an
I'm
issue.
I'm all for it. A couple of Viva, tequila seltzers on the side.
We could dunk it. That's the deal, dude. We put Viva tequila seltzer in those red solo cups, and we dunk them in the Viva tequila seltzer. You probably could drink three or four. You could probably eat three or four more hot dogs.
Then we go on the radio.
Hey, this NBA offseason is off the charts. Crazy like the glue. But last season was the same, man, and I love it. I talked about last season, the NBA catching up to the NFL, the offseason. I know it's not close, but it's exciting. The movement, the player talk about, the stars, all the stuff. This year is the same. It's not disappointing, and I know there are a lot of fan base, a lot of people turned off by the Kyrie stuff and the Kevin Durant and all this stuff. But to me, as an NBA basketball fan in general, I love the offseason.
Steph, I'll take the bias badge, but I think it's better than the NFL offseason. One, it is close.
No way. No way.
I think so, because more stars change hands, and it happens to some extent every offseason. You get big names.
Yeah, but dude, you have the NFL draft right after the season, and then that just propels everything and changes the game.
Right. And so not only have that, but you have all the petty wars that start to break out, which is a delicious element to it. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that like the NBA transactions and rumor mills more than the game itself, and for good reason.
Kyrie says he's in, but then wants a trade, or the trade rumors are happening, swirling. We're hearing Lakers maybe. First of all, why would anyone take Russell Westbrook in his contract? Why would anybody do that in their right mind?
If they're that desperate to get rid of Kyrie, but my stance, if I'm the Nets, is that I'm willing to do what Daryl Morey did with Ben Simmons and say, you can sit out until we get what we want in return. And this Lakers package, where they're the only team showing interest in you right now, and we don't like what they're offering, I would not jump to take it. I'd be willing to play this out into the season.
Kevin Durant, I guess, wants out. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I can't keep up with it. He says he wants out. What are some landing spots for him? I know crazy Celtics fans think he could come to Boston with Jaylen Brown and 17 draft picks. Where does Kevin Durant end up?
So the Celtics could get him. I think they are committed to the – they could, Pep, but I think they are committed to the moving forward with their current core and not shaking it up. When it comes to realistic landing spots, the top destinations that he wants to go to, and if you don't think that he has a say in where he's ultimately going to wind up, then you haven't been paying attention to the NBA. So the top of his list is Phoenix.
Miami.
Number two is Miami.
Yep.
We have no idea if he wants to go to Toronto or not, but they might be able to have the best offer on the table, especially if they include Scottie Barnes, which for Kevin Durant, they absolutely should, in my opinion. But ultimately, if I'm the Nets, I'm trying to talk to him about coming back and saying, we get that you're frustrated with not just the Kyrie thing, but leadership in general. We own our mistakes. Let's grow and work together and running back, because they're not going to like any offer they get more than having Kevin Durant on their roster. And if that means moving on from Sean Marks, then so be it.
It was funny, dude. I was reading a story today about the Nets and being a super team that never won it, and then it compared to other teams. It was the 2003-04 Lakers with Kobe and Shaq, and they added Karl Malone and Gary Payton and didn't win. They talked about the 2009 to 2012 OKC Thunder. We know who was on that team. They couldn't win it. The 2011-2017 clip joint with Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. And the list went on and on. And there was actually a baseball team on there, which, you know, some of those basketball teams I mentioned, like, are eye-popping, but the Phillies in 2011, Roy Halladay, this is the pitching lineup, Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, Roy Oswalt, and Cole Hamels. And, oh, by the way, they had Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, and Jimmy Rollins, and they didn't win. And then they mentioned the Pats with Brady and Moss. Talk about super teams that never won it. If you look at those teams, which one do you think was the biggest disappointment?
Oh, that's a great question. I do remember that Philly's rotation being on the cover of Sports Illustrated
that year. My God!
Another Philly team is, if you remember, when Vince Young and Ronnie Brown and all these guys went to the Eagles and they declared themselves a super team.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did absolutely nothing. Jack squat. And so I do remember that as well. When it comes to what from that group is the most disappointing, you're going to hate my answer, Pep, but I think it's the 07 Patriots to go 18-1 and to be such heavy favorites and lose that Super Bowl. And they couldn't protect Brady. They couldn't get anything going offensively. And they go ahead late in the game. So it's different than not even getting there. They were on the verge of completing the perfect season, and they just couldn't get the one last stop they needed and did it in the most gut-wrenching fashion. It was almost like the football gods did it to them, you know, intentionally. So that, to me, I think is a fair answer, but not to get too long-winded. When it comes to the disappointment of this Brooklyn squad, especially if it does blow up right now, I mean, they had three top 15 players and didn't even get to the conference finals, let alone play for the Larry O'Brien trophy. So that, to me, is the second most underwhelming super team result in NBA history, behind the Warriors blowing the 3-1 lead the year they won more regular season games than any other team.
You could look at any of those teams I mentioned, but that, again, that Kobe, Shaq, you add Karl Malone and Gary Payton, that is unbelievable.
But those guys were at the end of their career. So
I know, but they still had some skills there. But then you talk about that Phillies lineup, and I still can't believe it. I was reading it going, oh, yeah, I remember that team. I can't believe it. But, yeah, again, any of those teams you could chalk up as a huge disappointment. They all were. Hey, man, the team that you cover were not a disappointment. Got to Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Made a lot of moves. What do you think?
I love the offseason they're having. And my biggest takeaway is how aggressive Brad Stevens is willing to get. And the same goes for ownership. They have always maintained that if this team can contend for a title, we will spend what it takes to bring home that next banner. And they did it with Kevin Garnett and company, and they're doing it yet again. They put a first-round pick on the table to keep Grant Williams and preserve the top eight of their rotation while adding Malcolm Brogdon to it, a player that makes north of $20 million. So I like that. I like the fact that Brad Stevens can accurately weigh these picks. Sometimes we get lost in the word potential and what it might turn into. But if you're looking at a pick that's in the 20s and potentially the late 20s, ideally it's the last pick in the draft, of course, then flipping that to get a player who is a sixth man that's been a starter almost his entire career and can address multiple needs for your team, that's a wise investment.
You know, it's funny, Bobby, because when you look at trades like the Malcolm Brogdon trade, and you look at that and you go, and again, you're wearing Celtics gear, you cover the Celtics, you root for that team, if you will. You're like, man, they fleeced the Indiana Pacers. What were the Pacers thinking in that deal? Because to me, it seems like they weren't thinking. How did they get rid of a guy like that?
I don't know if I would use the term fleece, because it's great in the sense that the Celtics aren't going to miss anything they gave up. And I still think that if Aaron Nesmith gets minutes, there's a reason he was considered the best shooter in his draft class. So you never know. It might pop for him in Indiana if he's able to be a part of that rotation. Nonetheless, the Celtics aren't going to miss what they parted ways with. And for the Pacers, Brogdon has been on the block for years now because of his contract, because of the direction they're moving in, because of his durability concerns. So at some point, they had to get something back and ultimately cut ties. The time was now. They're one of these teams, Pep, that are tanking for this generational prospect, Victor Wembanyama, who's going to be the number one pick next year. He's a 7-footer from France who can do a bit of everything. You're going to hear his name more and more in the coming months. And so they're trying to bottom out and get to him while developing the youth on their roster right now. So they'll take another first-round pick, get Brogdon off the books, bring in someone like Nesmith, and try and just clear out cap space and ultimately hope that the ping pong balls bounce their way.
And former Celtic great, former president, former draftee of the Toronto Blue Jays, Danny Ainge, now with Utah, said, hold my beer. He trades his star, Rudy Gobert, to Minnesota for 17 first-round draft picks, actually just four. But that was a huge deal for Danny Ainge, who absolutely loves draft picks.
Yeah, shout-out to Brian Windhorst. And so when it comes to the return, I don't understand what the Timberwolves are doing. I think it's a miscalculation on their part. I understand that you can get better and then figure out how to pivot from there. But to me, it reeks of new ownership and a new GM taking a big swing. And I think Danny Ainge, it does remind me of the Brooklyn trade with Garnett and Pierce, where he kind of like a vulture circling his prey.
Yep.
He realized the situation unfolding in Minnesota, made the phone call, thought he might be able to, you know, jack up the price, and he got away with it. That, I mean, I wouldn't want Rudy Gobert based on what we've seen in the playoffs on my team, period. Then you add in his contract, which is of max value, and I want him even less. And then you're telling me I have to give up the farm to get him and all these picks and some players that I like. And there's no way I would do that deal. And on top of it, Pep, the Minnesota Timberwolves, where are they going next season with Karl Anthony Towns and a 21-year-old Anthony Edwards? This team, I feel like at best they're going to be in the second round and get bounced. And Gobert, he's only going to get worse year by year from now on. So I don't understand this move at all. Very impatient on Minnesota's part.
What's going on with the Warriors? They win the ship. They seem quiet this offseason. Are they content?
Yeah, there is some rumbling, Pep, that all parties involved have spoken to Kevin Durant, that being Steph, Clay, and Draymond, that everyone's open to it. You know, if it gets out to the public, I think they're willing to be conscious about what's put out there, that basically no one's pushing for it, but everyone would be just fine with a reunion and a part two there. Hopefully, I don't think the league wants to see that. I don't think fans are interested in that happening again. You know, we lived it. We're over it now. And so when it comes to what they're doing, Gary Payton II got too much money for them to keep, especially when you factor in just how far over the luxury tax they are. They're looking at around $400 million, probably north of that. They're going to have to spend on this roster this coming season. So they keep Kevon Looney instead at a more reasonable price for them. And ultimately, I think they're content that their core continue to integrate these young pieces like a Jonathan Kuminga, like a James Wiseman, like a Moses Moody, and a Jordan Poole, and that they're going to be just fine.
Bobby, final minute, actually a little bit less here. Rookie extensions, good for the league. You keep a player on the team, but it seems like you're paying $250 million for these young players that maybe are not going to be very motivated to work harder. It seems crazy to me.
I haven't seen too many examples in quite some time of a player who worked to the point of earning a max or near max rookie extension and then decided it was time to kick his feet up. So I think that it works in the sense that, one, there's not really an example of that, and two, that, you know, these teams, if you're allowed to draft a player and pluck them, and there's going to be a draft system in place, then the next step is you want to sow that loyalty in and have fans come to root for someone who can be there as long as possible, even in today's NBA climate, on shorter-term contracts. So to be able to extend that
yep.
at a price that the rest of the market can't offer, it's just another way
gotcha.
Of doing good business around the league and with each fan base.
Bobby, keep up the good work. You're in the air chair on Thursday with Brendan Conley. Keep up the good work, buddy.
Pep, always a pleasure.
Covers the NBA Celts at SI Now and Basketball Insiders. Bobby Krivitsky, final timeout of hour number one. We'll come back and tell you about hour number two next. Keep it right here. It's the Diehards.
You're listening to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
It is the Tuesday edition of the Diehards, the gambling edition every Tuesday. So hour number two, we'll do a lot of gambling. Professional gambler, handicapper, friend of the show will join us on the Progressive Guest Line from 98.5, the Sports Hub, Diehards host Dan Lifschatz. Also, we'll head to the Progressive Guest Line to talk with our pal, content provider for DraftKings. He does the Unreasonable Odds podcast. Julian Edlow will join the Diehards coming up in hour number two. And we'll head firmly on the Las Vegas Strip from SportsX Radio. Ken Thompson will hang out with us. Keep it right here. My name is Anthony Pepe, the OG, the original Diehard. You're locked into the Sports Map Radio Network.